Well, I call your attention to the book of Daniel. We were in chapter 4 last week, and we are going to bite off a good chunk tonight. We will be beginning in verse number 4, and we'll go down through verse 17 this evening. Now, we're not going to get to the interpretation. We're only going to see the actual dream itself. The title of the message tonight is Nebuchadnezzar's Second Troubling Dream. When we looked at the first part of the chapter last Sunday evening, we covered the first three verses, and I made the statement, and I believe that it's an accurate statement, that really you could take those three verses and you could put them at the end, because that was the conclusion to what is taking place in Daniel chapter 4. I believe that Nebuchadnezzar truly meets the Lord in this chapter. It's been a slow train coming, though. When you read through this book, from the time in Daniel chapter 2, when there was the first dream that nobody could even tell what it was until Daniel rolled in, you had about 25 years, maybe 30. So there's been a little bit of time that's passed between that first dream and this second dream. The first dream that Nebuchadnezzar had, he was honored. He was thinking, hey, this is pretty good. I'm the gold. I'm the head. I'm the one that's the big kahuna, all right? But in this dream tonight, in chapter 4, two chapters later, 25, 30 years later, he's not going to be honored. He is going to be disgraced. And we will see the interpretation of that next week, and then we'll begin to see the interpretation play out very, very quickly. And so tonight we are going to be looking at his second dream. Well, the first thing that I want you to notice tonight is I want you to notice that worldly understanding always comes up short. That ought to be a truth that is driven home in your heart. These young people, they need to remember that. The wisdom of this world is not right. I don't care what the culture says. You take the word of God as truth. But most people, they do not want to accept the word of God. We have people that are looking for answers in all the wrong places. I think 30 or 40 years ago, there was a country song about looking for love in the wrong places. Well, people look for answers in the wrong places. And Nebuchadnezzar is a living example of this in our passage tonight. And so the first thing that we find him is we find him in verse number 4. We find him at rest. We find him flourishing. That simply means that he has no more things that are going on to cause him angst. There are no more nations that are strong militarily. All of them have already been subdued and conquered. He has no other building projects that are going on. He's already got the Hanging Gardens of Babylon built, which is one of the wonders of the world. He's already made Babylon the Great. And so he is at rest and he is there in his home and he is flourishing. The idea of flourishing, it is the idea of to grow green. One of the things that I do is I like to look at plants. I look at plants at our house. Sometimes it'll be in the garden. Sometimes it'll be one of Deb's flowers. And we'll talk about, you know, that plant it's got some yellow to it. You know, it's either got too much water or there's not quite enough nutrients here. And we'll begin to try to make adjustments. And what are we trying to do? We're trying to get it to be green. Because green is a color that has the idea of healthy, has the idea of flourishing. And so it says that he was at rest in his house and he was flourishing. He was growing green. Everything was coming up roses in Babylon. Well, there's something else that happens in verse number 5. He said, I saw a dream which made me afraid. You know, it's amazing how when everything's going great, then all of a sudden trouble steps in. And this dream was something that caused him to become scared. Now, when I just read this, to be honest with you, I don't see anything scary at all about it. But some people have fears that other people do not have. I know of some people that are scared to death of spiders. I know some people that spiders don't bother them in the least. I'm kind of one of those. If I can see him, I'm not really worried about him. But now snakes are a different animal altogether. But there's some people who just pick up a snake. I think they're nuts, but they'll just pick up a snake. There's some people that don't like clowns. Have you ever known anybody that just didn't like a clown? All right? We have phobias. We have fears. And when I read this, I don't really see much that's scary about it, but evidently Nebuchadnezzar did. And so he says that he was afraid. And he says, "And the thoughts upon my bed and the visions upon my head troubled me." I want you to notice when you look at this, the plural that's there. There's thoughts that are plural. There are visions that are plural. So the way that I take this, whenever I just read it and let the text speak, when I read it, it's as though he's had the dream and he's not forgotten this dream. He knows this dream. Now the one back over in chapter 2, there's some people think that he remembered it, he just wouldn't tell anybody. I personally think that he didn't know. There are times when I have dreams, and before I ever wake up in my subconscious, I say, "I am going to remember this when I wake up," and you wake up and it's gone. Anybody ever have that happen? It's like, I've got to remember this. I've got to remember this. I mean, it's been a good thought. It's been a good dream. I'm going to remember this and I'm going to tell Deb. And then all of a sudden it's like, it won't come because I can't remember what it was. Well, in this situation, he remembers it. The first one, probably not. But in this one, he thinks about it. And every time he thinks about it, it troubles him. It scares him. And it begins to work in his heart. I don't know if you've ever heard of Vance Havner. But Vance Havner is an old-time preacher, wrote quite a few books. And he made this statement about his sermons. He said, "Some of my sermons are like time bombs." He said, "It may be a long time before they go off, but they go off." And when I read that, I thought, that's a pretty good analogy. You've got a preacher that'll preach and he'll think, "Well, nobody got anything out of that." And I don't know, I've had that thought 1,000 times. It's like, "Well, nobody got nothing out of that today." And all I'm hoping is that I have sermons like Vance Havner's, because he's gone down as someone that made a huge difference in the 20th century in Christianity. And so you've got Daniel, and he has preached quite a few things. 25, 30 years earlier, what did he do? He gave a testimony. He gave an interpretation. He even gave the dream. Nebuchadnezzar probably is thinking, "Well, okay, I remember Daniel doing that. Spirit of the gods are sure in that," and he's going to say this here in a moment. He remembers when he was taken captive and he was put into Babylonian school for 3 years. And he did not eat the king's meat, but yet he was more healthy, he and Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, than the other people that had been placed in the captivity. And so there's been a testimony to him all the time. What about chapter 3? Was he not there, all ticked off, full of pride, full of fury, and he throws those boys, which were really young men, into that furnace? And now, instead of three being in the furnace, there's four, one likened unto the Son of God. And so you've got these testimonies and these things that he sees. How many times have you known of an unsaved person, And what have they done? They have seen God have a servant. And that servant has lived right. That servant has tried to do right. And all of a sudden, that testimony put them under conviction, and they got saved. I remember years ago hearing Brother Don tell the story about a guy that was up in Cherokee County. And he said that he was a milkman. And this man would deliver milk to this one particular house. And he said there was always a light on at this one home. And he said it was always curious to me, why would there be a light on at 3:30, 4 o'clock in the morning? And he said, so one morning, he said, I was delivering that milk to that home. And he said, I just decided I was just going to look in that window and see what was happening. And so he eased over to the window and he looked in, and the old gentleman that lived there was on his knees with his face in his hands, and he was praying and crying out to God to save people's souls in that community. The man told Brother Don, he said, I never got away from seeing that old man praying at 3 and 4 o'clock in the morning. And he said, that was the testimony that brought me to Christ. And Nebuchadnezzar has seen things for now 25, 30 years. He's seen Daniel as a young man. He has seen Daniel live his life as the chief of the Chaldeans. He has seen all of these things happening. And he's getting closer and closer. Now, as I mentioned last week, he's a believer. But now he's telling us the final steps and how he got to become a follower of Jehovah. And so he has this dream. And he's looking in the wrong places. He's looking and he calls the magicians. He calls the astrologers. He calls the Chaldeans. He calls the soothsayers. And he said, I told them the dream before them, but they did not make known unto me the interpretation thereof. So you've got all of these men. Their predecessors, some of them have probably died off. Some of them were actually killed. And so you've got a whole new set. And these guys, they don't care about Daniel a whit. And so they are basically being called in to give the interpretation. Now, in my mind, I'm thinking, you know, all you got to do is think back 25 years. Daniel told me this. Why didn't you just call him in? But the natural man receives not the things of the Lord. Not only that, the foolishness of God is wiser than the wisest of men. You find both of those in 1 Corinthians 1 and 1 Corinthians 2. And so I don't really know why. I mean, I think it's pure speculation. But I know this. I know that he was looking for peace. He was troubled, and even though Babylon was not in a war with anybody, even though they didn't really have a whole lot of building going on, there was something inside of him that was causing him problems. It's no different today. When this was taking place, it was sometime probably around 570 BC. So we're talking 2,500, 2,600 years ago. And so what do we have? Human nature is the same today. There are times when you have people that are outwardly successful, but on the inside, they are just constantly fighting. Is that one that James said when he says there are fightings like within you? There are fightings among you? And you and I need to realize that peace doesn't come from a bunch of things. Peace comes from being right with God. And once we get saved, that's the first step. But then we need to have peace with other people as well. And there's people in the world today, and they seek peace, they chase peace, and they never can find peace. And what do? They look for it in a bottle. They look for it in some type of drug. They look for it in pleasure. They go and they'll sit on a psychologist's couch for years and years and years. Did I tell you about the guy that was having a problem and he thought somebody was under his bed. Did I tell you all that? I did? All right, then I won't tell it again. All right, okay. But anyway, they go to places like psychologists, psychiatrists, and they'll just lay their heart out, and they're none the better. But if they would simply take the prescription that God gives us in his book, they could get better quickly. But pride won't let them do it. They think that education and a bunch of letters after somebody's name is going to make it happen, when the truth of the matter is, it's the truths of the Word of God that are going to give you peace. And so we see that worldly understanding always comes up short. But in verse number 8 through verse number 12, we see that the wisest of the wise always comes through. And of course, we're talking about Daniel. It's the book that bears his name. And so, if you look with me at verse number 8, it says this, "But at the last, Daniel came in before me." Now remember, Nebuchadnezzar is the one that's writing this. What we're reading in chapter 4 is an official version of Chaldean history. This would be in the annals of the Babylonian record keeping. And so he says, "But at the last," in other words, everybody else tried it. You know, the soothsayers tried it, and the Chaldeans tried it, and the astrologers tried it. All of them tried it. "But at the last, Daniel came in before me, whose name was Belshazzar." And the reason that he is calling him that is because this is the official record. Well, the people of Babylon would really not have known Daniel by Daniel, because that was his Hebrew name. But they would have known him by Belshazzar because he was the chief of the Chaldeans. And so he is identified by his Babylonian name. And he was named after a god in Babylon. That's what Nebuchadnezzar tells us in verse 8. And he says that in this man is the spirit of the holy gods, and before him I told the dream. And so we see that here was at the last. Now the question is asked, why did he wait for Daniel to come in last? I don't know that the Bible gives us an exact answer to that. We can speculate on it. I probably have my own thought on it. You can have your own thought on it. But just remember, it's only my thought and your thought, and it's speculation. And possibly when we get to heaven, we can ask Nebuchadnezzar, why did you not call him in first? And somebody says, well, Daniel was the chief of the astrologers and the Chaldeans, so he was just waiting for them to exhaust themselves in failure. That sounds plausible to me. Habit of doing that is something that many of the prophets did. Is that not what Elijah did on Mount Carmel? When you had the 450 prophets of Baal, and what were they doing? They were screaming and they were yelling and they were cutting themselves, and they're trying to get their dead gods to answer by fire, and Elijah begins to mock them. Oh, perhaps he's on a journey. He's gone on a vacation. And so you've got all of this mocking that's going on. Well, you don't see Daniel mocking, but you don't see him in the midst of them either. And so maybe he wanted them to fail utterly. Why? So that the testimony of Jehovah would be great again. And so that's one of the reasons. Maybe he wasn't close to the king at the time of the dream. When you have positions of authority, sometimes you have to travel. And so you've got Daniel, and maybe he was in a different province. You know, it wasn't like he could jump on a Delta, you know, and be home in 30 minutes. You know, when you're traveling by an animal, you know, you probably are making about 30 miles a day. If you had to walk, it's about 20 miles a day. And so maybe he wasn't close at the time. Somebody else has speculated that maybe Nebuchadnezzar didn't really want to have bad news at that time, And let's face it, Daniel told the truth, and so if this is going to be bad news, I just don't want to hear it. It's like, I just don't want to know. Years ago, when my children were still in high school, there was a boy that went to the school that our kids did, and he was in my son's class. But he had an older sister, and that older sister was basically just giving her parents fits over a boy. I don't know of anything that's more ignorant than a teenage girl over a boy, unless it's a teenage boy over a girl. And so one morning during the week, this young man named Stephen, he's sitting in the back seat, and his mother is just beside herself. She doesn't know what to do. The daughter has driven her own self to school. And so his mother begins to vent to Stephen. And she begins to say, "Your sister, I'm telling you, Stephen, she is doing this, she's doing that." And she begins to enumerate different things that she's doing. She's staying out late. She's hanging out with this boy that they don't like. And finally, Stephen, he just simply in the back seat, he throws his hands up and he says, "I don't want to know." Okay. And you know what? That has become really kind of a joke in our family. Every once in a while, I'll begin being told something. I'll say, "I don't want to know." And maybe Nebuchadnezzar was like that. He just, I mean, 25, 30 years ago, he got this. Now, he was the head, but it was only temporary. There was going to be somebody come after him. He didn't like that. But now, he's thinking, what's the interpretation of this dream? Is it bad? I don't want to know. And maybe that was the legitimate reason. And then, maybe it's that he's just the best, and so if these other guys can't do it, then I'll just call in the best guy. Well, look at verse number 9, and what does it say about him in verse number 9? I think it says that there's no secret that troubles thee. In other words, you don't get confused about anything. Anytime I've ever asked you something, you've had an answer. And so we see that the wisest of the wise is going to come through. Now, if you look at verse number 10, one of the things that you see is you see the dream itself. Let's delve into that a little bit. "There were the visions," plural, "of mine head in my bed. I saw, and behold, a tree in the midst of the earth. The height thereof was great. The tree grew, was strong. The height thereof reached up unto heaven. The sight thereof to the end of all the earth. The leaves thereof were fair. The fruit thereof much. And in it was meat for all. The beast of the field had shadow under it. The fowls of heaven dwelt in the boughs thereof. And all flesh was fed of it." So you have the description of the dream. Do you see why I don't see the scariness of it? All I'm seeing is a big tree. It's a high tree. It's got beautiful limbs that are hanging out. What's scary about that? Now, if you were under the tree in a storm, maybe you'd think, well, one of the leaves is going to crack off and, you know, hit me in my noggin. But I just don't see the scariness. But fear comes in different packages, as I mentioned at the beginning. And so we have this situation here. Well, when you look at the description here, I think that you're going to see that it's in the midst of the earth. What does that mean? That means that it is a focal point. It is a dominant location. Now, I think that Jerusalem is called the navel of the world for a particular reason, because I think that when you're wanting to know things about prophecy, you start right there. You find Jerusalem and you work out from there. But at this particular time, this is the beginning of Gentile world domination. There had never been a dominant empire as large as the Babylonians. And so when you see that it was in the midst of the earth, that means that it was a central, it was a dominant location. It was huge. It says that the height of it was great in verse number 10. Not only that, it says that others could see it from the end of the earth. And so you've got that description. In other words, they know about this huge tree because they can see it from a long, long way off. It talks about the foliage and the fruit of it. And what does that mean? It means that it was healthy. It was thriving. You had fruit that was there. Meat for all. In other words, everybody got to eat. Not only did the people get to eat, but the beasts of the field, they had shadow underneath the limbs of it. You had the fowls of the heaven that dwelt in the boughs. They were able to get up into the leaves, into the limbs, and they were able to just kind of live around up there in safety. And all flesh was fed of it. Whether it was beast or fowl, everybody was fed because of Babylon. This is a description, I think, that is very pictorial in much of the Old Testament writings. Often trees are symbolic of nations and groups of people. The Bible talks about olive trees, and the Bible talks about cedar trees, and you have all of these things. Well, not only that, but even some of the other prophets. I thought I would give you one of those tonight. Hold your place in Daniel chapter 4, because we've still got one more point that we've got to cover. But I want you to hold your place here, and I want you to go back to Ezekiel 31. Ezekiel and Daniel, they prophesied about the same time, all right? It's somewhere around 570 BC. And let me just show you how that there's other prophets that uses these figures of speech, okay? 31, let's look at verse number 3. Behold, the Assyrian was a cedar in Lebanon with fair or good branches, and with a shadowing shroud, and of a high stature, just like the tree in Daniel 4. And his top was among the thick boughs. Look down at verse 5. Therefore his height was exalted above all the trees of the field. His boughs were multiplied. His branches became long because the multitude of waters when he shot forth or began to grow. Verse 6, all the fowls of heaven, middle part of verse 6, all the beasts of the field, they dwelt under his shadow. Look at verse 10. It says, because thou hast lifted up thyself in height and hath shot up his top among the thick boughs. Look at verse 11. I have therefore delivered him into the hand of the mighty one. In other words, just like this tree is going to be cut down in Daniel 4, this one is going to be taken down. Verse 12, middle part. In all the valleys his branches are fallen. His boughs are broken by all the rivers of the land. And all the people of the earth are gone down from his shadow and have left him. That's exactly what is going to happen here in Daniel chapter 4. So go back to Daniel. And let's look at the third thing and the final thing tonight. I want you to notice that there are watchers that are revealed. Now, what are watchers? They're angels. They're angels. Look at verse 13. And I saw in the visions of my head upon my bed, and behold, a watcher. And an holy one came down from heaven. Angels are ministering spirits. I believe in guardian angels. I believe that you and I have guardian angels. I think that the scriptures teach that. As a matter of fact, I think that we have at least two. Now, we don't know their names. I would be very shocked if there's anybody in here that has personally had a confrontation with an angel. But I think that there are times that there are angels that manifest themselves in certain situations. I guess it's been 25 years ago now. I heard the story, and I don't know if I heard it from Brother Ralph Sexton or if I heard it from some other preacher, but it was concerning his dad, Ralph Sexton Sr. Not Brother Ralph Jr., but Ralph Sexton Sr. He was a little man. He was not big and tall like Ralph. He was a little man. And he was a hard preacher up in Asheville. And in this particular story that I was told, Brother Sexton Sr., he was standing on a sidewalk and he was street preaching in front of a bar. Well, the bartender didn't like it. You're running my business. And he just kept preaching. Well, there were two big old bouncers that came outside and they took him. They slapped him a couple of times and threw him into a garbage heap that was down several feet from the entrance of the door. And all of a sudden, the testimony from Brother Sexton Sr. was this. There was a guy that just showed up. And he beat those two guys to a pulp. And he said, and I'm trying to get up and get my bearings, and all of a sudden I look around, and he's gone. He was gone just as quickly as he showed up. Well, you know what watchers do? They do what God wants them to do. And angels are not a being to be trifled with. That's why when people give place to the devil, it's concerning to me, because we don't open up our hearts and minds to the satanic one, because he has minions. He has demons that will do his bidding. And I think that there are people that have given themselves over to demonic influences. And I think that for those that are not children of God, I think that there's a danger of even possession. Now, I do not believe that a child of God can be possessed, because the Holy Spirit of God lives inside of the child of God, and greater is he that's in you than he that's in the world. I don't believe that God would take up residence in a place where there was a demon. But I do think that there can be oppression when we give place to the devil. And so you've got this situation here. You've got a man that is unsaved, and you've got these watchers. But in this particular case, they're not evil angels. They're good angels. And they're doing the work of God. And they are coming down and they are letting him experience. And possibly, maybe the angels are where some of the fear came from. Because every time you read about angels in the Bible, until they get calmed down a little bit, people are scared. So maybe that's where part of the fear is. And so you've got this watcher that has come down from heaven. And he cried aloud. In other words, he was like a messenger. He was a herald, all right? And he said thus, "Hew down the tree, cut off his branches, shake off the leaves, scatter his fruit, let the beast get away from under it and the fowls from his branches." In other words, that beautiful tree that is so huge that people from the ends of the world are seeing it. He's saying, cut it down. Take the branches off. Scatter the leaves. Run off the animals and the birds that are around it. And he's thinking, what's going on here? And maybe because of the verbiage that's used here, the words that are used here, I want you to notice something with me. I want you to notice, beginning in verse 12, how Nebuchadnezzar describes it. He says, "The leaves thereof were fair, and the fruit thereof much, and in it." Nebuchadnezzar calls the tree it. It was meat for all. The beast of the field had shadow under it. The fowls of the heaven dwelt in the bowels thereof, and all flesh was fed of it. So you've got three times the pronoun it used. But then I want you to look with me at verse 14, 15, and 16. And he cried aloud and said thus, hew down the tree and cut off his branches. Not its branches, his branches. Shake off his leaves and scatter his fruit. And let the beasts get away from under it and the fowls from his branches. Look at verse 15. Nevertheless, leave the stump of his roots. Go down to the end of verse 15. Let his portion be with the beast of the grass of the earth. Look at verse 16. Let his heart be changed from a man's, and let a beast heart be given unto him. And let seven times pass over him. So the pronoun goes from it to him. Maybe he's beginning to get a little inkling about, maybe this is talking about me. And maybe that's where the fear is coming from. Maybe the fear of the angel. Maybe the fear of the fact that the angel is not saying things exactly the way that he's been trying to say things. And so we have these changes here. Now, I want to mention a phrase there that is given at the end of verse 16, just so that you'll kind of get the idea. It says, and let seven times pass over him. So what do you have? You've got this man whose heart is going to be changed from a man's to a beast. By the way, there is a term for this. There is a mental disorder, and I hope that I'm pronouncing this right. There's two disorders. One is a little more specific. The first one is where a person literally thinks that they are part of maybe some animal species. It's been about 2 years ago now, but I saw a couple of lunatics in a picture from London, and they were on all fours, and they were dressed like they were dogs. And they had somebody that had the leashes, and they were pulling them along, and they're just kind of bouncing along on the streets of London. And I'm thinking, they're crazy. Then I find out that they do that constantly in San Francisco. You know, and so you've got people that they've got some issues. I think in some cases it's sin. In many cases it's sin. Probably the most of the cases it's sin. Where that they have turned their back on anything that is God, but there are some people, and they suffer from a mental disorder, and it is, I think it's pronounced zoanthropy. It's spelled Z-O-A-N-T-H-R-O-P-Y, or H-Y, and that has the idea of a person that thinks they are a part of the animal species. But there is one that is probably more accurate with Nebuchadnezzar. And we will see this later on in chapter 4. And this is pronounced, I think I'm doing this correctly, boanthropy. And it is spelled B-O-A-N-T-H-R-O-P-H-Y. And this is when the person thinks that they are actually a part of the bovine family. In other words, they think that they're a bull, or they think that they're a cow. And so they just simply get out on all fours and they just begin to munch on grass because they think that they're part of the cow family. They think they're a bovine. And so you've got this angel, and he's giving really what's going to happen. And he's hearing this and he's going, you're going to let this man's heart become like a beast heart? And why are they doing this? Well, let me pay off something I didn't tell you. The seven times pass over him, that is most likely a reference to 7 years. Not 7 minutes, not 7 days, not 7 weeks. Most likely 7 years. That's what most commentators think, because they look at the life of Nebuchadnezzar and they think, If he had something come upon him for 7 hours or 7 days, that's probably not going to change this man much. Not when he's had 25 or 30 years of a testimony. He needs something dramatic to happen in his life. And so what happens? God changes his mind. His heart goes from the heart of a man to the heart of a beast. And we will see in the coming couple of weeks, we will see that for 7 years, he's out. He's rolling around in the grass like an animal. He's eating grass. His hair grows long. His fingernails grow. His toenails grow. He's unkempt. And we're going to see that come to pass because this is a prophecy of what's coming. Well, why is God letting the watchers give this decree? This matter is by decree of the watchers. Well, what do the watchers do? They do God's bidding. And the demand by the word of the holy ones, to the intent that the living may know that the Most High ruleth in the kingdom of men. In other words, when you're lifted up with pride and you think that you're the big kahuna, just remember this. God's in charge. He can take you out whenever he chooses to, but can I tell you that even in this, we can see the grace and the mercy of God? You say, well, preacher, how do you see that? I see this because God lets him regain his mind, and that's when he comes to faith in Jehovah. And so, tonight, we've seen Nebuchadnezzar's second dream. Next time, we'll see the interpretation.